Queen Carvania stood haloed by the morning sun. An army hung on her every word.
My champions, I have sold my chariot on Carvana. 'Twas a lovely SUV, an inexplicably queenly offer. They're even coming to the castle to collect it. Tonight, we feast!
An offer you can feast on. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Hello and welcome back to The Playbase. Today I have a very different episode for you. It's actually one I've wanted to do for a long time, and I really pushed it off for a very long time. So here I am by myself. Yeah, it's a weird thing to sit here by myself and talk to myself, I guess, but really I'm talking to you. I put it out there that I want to share with you guys. I want to share from my heart, from my soul, and also share any knowledge that I have, my insight. I always say I am not the god of behavior, and what I don't know, I will find ways to figure out. But I've had some incredible experiences in my professional work. I've had some deeply impactful experiences in my personal life. And all of these things kind of mesh together to make the human that you are listening to or watching right now. So to get started, I'll introduce myself. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Frances Fishman. I am an almost 40-year-old, maybe when you're listening to this, I'll be 40. I'm an almost 40-year-old woman who has a deep-rooted, soul-burning passion that has driven me in my life to start a company called The Playbase, support children, support families, support educators, support people. I am a deeply spiritual being who has felt the magic of energy, has experienced the most magnificent manifestations, has lived through my own life experience, whatever my soul's journey is. I am someone who believes that every single thing you experience in this life is meant for you, is happening for you. I don't believe anything happens to us. I believe deeply that our souls are all on this journey to grow, to heal, to learn, to experience, to transform this world, to make it a better place. So I try to do my part. I feel incredibly empowered when I sit in that energy of I'm working in my soul's purpose. I'm doing things that are my soul's purpose. And if you do the same, you know that feeling. That feeling of doing something that is bigger than you. That'll far surpass this moment. That'll far surpass the person just experiencing it with you. That exceeds all of that because that energy transmutes and travels everywhere and is experienced by everyone. It's just really powerful. So I put it out there for you guys to ask me some questions. If you noticed in my introduction, I did not say I'm a BCBA, probably because of the amount of punishment I have experienced by using those letters following my name. Now, if you are a BCBA or you practice ABA or you're a board certified behavior analyst or a registered behavioral technician or you're an RBA in Canada or you practice ABA or have been trained in ABA, you may have experienced this, when people find out who you are or what you do. I have countless times experienced that energetic wall of China go up in front of me when I give someone my credentials, because to them that means something specific. It means trauma. It means, in some cases, fraud. if you move down here in Florida like I did, or you've been working here, it's a very interesting field down here sometimes. It means imposed will. It means not honoring a person. It means forcing my way. It means conditioning as a priority over the human and the soul experiencing it in some instances. And in other instances, it means unconditional love and acceptance. It means compassion. It means support. It means guidance. It means mutual respect. It means growth. It means development. It means magic. It means, how can I explain what it means? Mm-hmm. Connection. Laughter. Joy. Love. That's what it can mean. That's what it means to me. This field, I make a joke. I don't know how good of a joke it is. I'm not the jokester in my family. It's more my husband and one of my daughters. But I make a joke that ABA doesn't need a facelift or Botox. ABA needs a full mommy makeover. Like, you go into the plastic surgeon, you say, change it all up. Take this and take that and put this and put that. Like, it needs a total makeover. Another expression I've used is it needs to be knocked upside the head with a frying pan, because that's my stance. And it's not everyone's stance. And that doesn't mean that it's bad, because it's not. And it doesn't have to be. But it has caused harm. And so when I introduce myself, especially when I moved down here, it was alarming to me, the negative response to when I introduce myself as being a BCBA and the CEO of an ABA company. Most people go, oh, and they step back energetically, physically, and they go, nice to meet you. And instead of hugging me, they will shake my hand. It's caused a barrier. So I'm here to answer questions, to share from my heart and soul. And I actually got my favorite question was asked by my mom. She asked me, how has your work changed you as a person? And I talk about this. And if you've listened to the podcasts, you've heard me share a little bit about it. I started in this field, I don't know, 17 years ago, 18 years ago. And I started in this field with a BA in psychology. Okay. I had not learned anything about ABA. I had very little knowledge about the individuals who received this service, but I found a job on, if you're a Canadian, you'll know what Kijiji is, or maybe you won't if it doesn't exist anymore. And I'm too old and now I'm aging myself, but I guess I already told you how old I am. I found a job entitled Behavior Therapist on Kijiji years ago. It's like a website where people sell things and post ads for jobs and things that they're selling. I saw the word therapist and I was like, I could be a therapist and I don't need my PhD. I'm applying. I'm there. Gone. Sent my application. Landed an interview with a psychologist or a BCBAD, who's a behavior analyst and a psychologist, and I got the job. She explained to me, I got the job because I had experience teaching. I was a dance teacher. I had experience at camp, which means I had experience leading and teaching and playing and engaging with kids. And I worked at a particular camp in Toronto called Camp Robin Hood, where they had an integration program, which I believe they still have. And I had a life-changing experience there. Unknowingly, I literally applied to work as a camp counselor because in high school, all my friends were like, you never went to camp. You're such a camp person. You need to come work with us. And so I did. I went to work at this camp and I had a camper with Down syndrome and I had a camper who I now would know has an autism diagnosis, but I was basically just told that she was non-communicative on my bus. In my camp group, I gravitated towards the child with Down syndrome. And on my bus, I gravitated towards the child who was non-communicative. There was something very special about their energy. And I can label that now as I like think back to what it felt like sitting beside this little girl, Alyssa, on the bus and connecting with her in this unusual, unconventional way, because traditionally I would talk to a child and I still did. And I sang and she lit up and her energy was just so angelic and pure and beautiful. And I loved being with her on the bus and with this little girl in my cabin. I found different ways to help her navigate things that she struggled with, like transitions. Like she had to get ready for swim, and that for her was hard to change. So I sang a song to get her to follow through with instructions that she probably was not following prior. And, you know, we were told she can elope and there's, you know, a cornfield, and make sure she doesn't elope, because if she runs away, we're searching in a cornfield for a child. And I was very aware of her essence, her mood, the way that she engaged, how the other kids interacted with her. It fascinated me, and not in a way of like realizing she was different, but more in a way of I learned from her. Not knowingly, truly not knowingly. I thought I was there to help her. And in the end, these kids changed my life. So when I saw this opportunity to work with kids with special needs, which I didn't realize was actually the job I applied for, I was so intrigued, but also so excited to learn. And I had a working interview and I came in this sundress outside and the child was playing Red Rover and swinging on swings and playing in a sandbox. And the psychologist said to me, she gave me different instructions. She wanted to see how I would follow the instructions, how I connected with the child. I landed the job and she said to me, next time you come in, you need to dress differently. And I was like, oh, I thought it was coming for, you know, professional interview. So I came dressed professionally. And she was like, if the child goes in the sandbox, you're going in the sandbox. If the child is running up a hill, you're running up a hill. If the child jumps into a pool, you're jumping in a pool. So you need to dress for the job. And I was like, okay. So all of my dance gear became my work gear. I got to dress comfortably and I got to play. I got to play for work. And not just play mindfully, play intentionally. Play for connection. Play to learn. Play to create learning opportunities. Play in a way where I connected to parts of myself that as I grew up, I kind of pushed away and I got to be silly and I got to be funny and I got to sing, and I don't have a great singing voice, but I got to sing and I got to be this version of myself that was dynamic and creative and mindful and present and compassionate and loving, but also firm. And I learned all these parts of myself that I guess I hadn't tapped into before. And it changed my life. I watched my clients, and it's so weird to call them that because I want to call them my kids. I watched these kids that I love grow, learn, discover themselves, tap into parts of themselves and their gifts and their talents, and watch them struggle through something and then get it. Yes. And say things like, I did it. I did it. And get to celebrate their tiny, medium, and massive victories with them, with tears in my eyes watching them graduate and experience them thriving, connecting to themselves and feeling whole and complete. That there's nothing wrong with them, but rather experience their magic. It ended up teaching me about myself. It was as I got older and fell in love with understanding energy and healing work that I had a healer that I work with. I worked with her for several years, and she said to me, you don't realize that some of what happened there actually stems from your own gifts. You don't give yourself any credit. And I remember going, huh? What are you talking about? Not realizing that what happened in the time that I worked with kids was not me witnessing their growth alone, was me participating in their healing and them participating in mine. It's this, like if you think of an infinity sign, it's this infinite energy loop of love, compassion, healing, growth, struggle, grit, perseverance, and it all kind of just keeps looping as we work together to figure it out. Because it's not, I'm the teacher, you're the student. It's we're both humans. We're both souls and we're both in on this together. I learned about my gifts through this work. I learned to accept myself. I didn't know I was going to cry. This work teaches me to accept myself. The way I accept those children. Like I said a million times, we get so much more from those kids and our clients than we can give them. The next question is, what legacy do you hope to leave through your work? That's a big one. The legacy I hope to leave is a huge imprint on this field. To provide a more compassionate, loving, mindful approach. One where the message of the field is unconditional love and acceptance, and not an attempt to change a person. ABA is not about fixing people. I mean, it has been an attempt to do that. And if you've heard me speak, you know, my strong belief is nobody needs fixing. Nobody is broken. We all need support. We all need tools. We all need guidance. We all need a village. And that's part of what ABA can provide. And maybe a big part of ABA that needs to change is to embrace the human and spiritual experience, which goes so much deeper than our behavior and what you can see. And the science has been reduced to observable things. Meanwhile, so many unobservable things, but things you can feel that are equally real, impact our behavior, impact who we are and how we show up. And such an important element of this field that I wish so much to change is that we approach every single individual as an individual, as a soul, as a child, as a young adult, as an adult, as whoever they are, as a parent, as a teacher. Approach them as a soul. Meet them where they are and help them build on their skills in a compassionate way. That's the legacy I wish to leave through the playbase, through my work. I wish to be a part of a massive change in this field. It's not just a wish, it's something I'm actively doing, and it's something I hope doesn't end with the playbase, but that it kind of ripples into all of the ABA going on out there in the world. To embrace our human or spiritual beings, to embrace our nervous system and how it impacts us, to embrace our traumas and how it impacts us, to embrace our attachment styles, to embrace our human essence. Instead of just trying to alter behaviors to be more neurotypical or appropriate. It's not all about that. I have some other questions that I wanted to get to. My children asked me, how did I start my business? And the answer to my kids and to everyone asking is, I think many businesses start because somebody notices a problem, a gap, an inefficiency, and they think of a solution, or they already know a solution, or they've actively worked with a solution that hasn't been implemented either where they are or at all. The psychologist who trained me moved to the States. I was living in Toronto. Her company kind of, you know, diffused, and I was left with figuring out where I wanted to work. So I went to work at an organization that offered ABA the way everyone else does. It was an incredible learning opportunity for me. And it also didn't align with my soul. It was very hard for me, very painful. I would come home in tears regularly to my now husband. Back then he was my fiance, and he said to me, if you know a better way or a different way that works better for you, do it. I support you. Start your own business. My husband is an entrepreneur. He has been in business since before he was old enough to be in business. And it was with his support, his push, because I was terrified. I'm going to be responsible for other people's children. I'm going to be the one who calls the shots. It's going to be on me. I watched people dictate in homes what happens. I watched parents look to these professionals to make decisions for their children. And it terrified me that I would hold that kind of power or say, or that I would be responsible in that sort of way for a child. Because I remember doing my coursework to become an analyst and being reminded repeatedly how dangerous it is to practice in this field incorrectly, how it's cost people their lives. It was like really hammered into my brain that to engage in malpractice in some way or to make a mistake can literally cost someone their life. And that's actually a huge trauma of mine. So it was a scary thing for me to do, to be the one responsible. But he encouraged me and he's like, what's holding you back? What are you scared of? And I said, I'm scared of screwing it all up. And he's like, but with your intention, with your knowledge, you won't. Who you are is not going to do that. And anyone who's in business knows how humbling a business experience is, because it is alongside parenting an experience that requires you to look at yourself, requires you to heal, requires you to step into your power in a very frightening way, in an ugly way. You know, people see business and think of like, you think of like millionaires, billionaires, and people who've reached success and make all this money and look how great their life is. But you don't see the steps that it takes to get there and the steps that they are taking to maintain that, to build and grow. Like, it is not a glamorous lifestyle. It requires you to look deep within, to cry ugly tears, like hyperventilation crying. Like, it is a very humbling experience I'm deeply grateful for. And I started it with his support as a one-woman show. Like, I did not have a team. I didn't know what I was doing. I had some of his guidance because he understood business. He did not understand my field at all. I didn't even understand my field, because when you go into education towards a career path, like, let's say you're going into medical school or you're going into OT or you're going into, I don't know, anything. You're not necessarily taking a business course. You're specializing in your craft. You become a psychologist. You don't learn to be a psychologist who runs their own practice. You figure that out the hard way. And I figured it out the hard way. I made many a mistakes. You know, there were parts of my career when I moved money from my children's savings account to be able to make ends meet in my business, because clients weren't paying, because they were so delayed, because of whatever. It was my responsibility to pay my staff. There were parts of my business, like when I started it, I gave my notice, and in the last 2 weeks of working, I found out I was pregnant. So I started my business pregnant. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, brilliant. You are going to start as a one-woman show and you're going to be pregnant, which means in about 9 months, what are you going to do? So I was terrified, but I had this need, this burning fire inside of me. And I had a support system that literally said, here, I'm going to help you. Go do it. So here I am, 11 years later. Lots of scars and scrapes and bruises, and equally as many highs and celebrations and incredible experiences. But I started my business with the support of my husband to fill a need, because I couldn't work anywhere else. It didn't align with who I am. It didn't work for me. And even when we were considering immigration, We spoke to an immigration lawyer during the very first lockdown during COVID. And I said, absolutely not. I am not moving anywhere. And they're like, actually, with your credentials, there are lots of job opportunities. You can get, you know, a visa. I thought to myself, I'd have to work somewhere else. How could I do that? I tried that and I lasted a year. How could I do that? And my family's entire life in the United States would be dependent on me keeping this job. It's not going to happen. Like I just know it's not possible. And that's when you know you need to start a business. Because you know there's a gap and you have a solution. And my solution was a different approach to ABA because the traditional approach just hurt me. It really did. So that's how I started my business. This is a non-business question. How does it feel to be a mother? My God. Every mom out there is taking a deep breath right now. Because it is the most out-of-body experience to love another person the way that we love our kids. To give the expression of my heart lives outside of my body is an example. It feels like I have three versions of me, not of me literally, but extensions of my soul walking this earth and my job. And not as a requirement of me, but as a deep burning fire in my soul, just like my business has this deep fire inside of my soul, is not just to love on my children deeply, but to guide them and set them up to live independently in this world. Independently with confidence, with conviction, with deep-rooted values, with a deep-rooted understanding of who they are and enough self-love to never sacrifice themselves and that version of themselves for others. You can sacrifice things, you can sacrifice time, you can, but not your essence, not your being, not who you are. To be true to your soul, to live out your soul's purpose, to walk through this planet feeling loved, supported, guided, connected, and driven internally from within is my purpose as a mom. Do I live that out every single day? Probably not. I try. But what it feels like to be a mom is the greatest blessing, the greatest gift, and the greatest challenge. Because to be a mom also means that when your children hurt, you hurt. When your children struggle, you struggle. And not in a way that is harmful to me, but in a way that I just feel them so deeply. And my goal is to not save or rescue anyone, but to support them, be a soft landing place, and almost like a trampoline with tools, have them land in for a big hug and go back out on their own, to be able to face anything and get to watch them and equally experience the joy and the high and the overwhelming feeling of watching your child thrive and experience joy and success and self-confidence and put themselves out there and fall and get back up and show how gritty they are and stand up for themselves, stand up for those that they believe in, stand up for the things that they believe in, with a strength, an inner strength and wisdom that surpasses anything I could do at their age, because that is what I'm witnessing with my own kids. They are stronger, wiser, grittier, braver than I ever was. And it's pretty incredible to witness. I can't imagine what they will be like in my age and what they will have accomplished and what they will have worked through and what magic they will have created in this world. I got a really great question from a friend. It was, please share how you work and mom at the same time and how you balance everything. And I find this question hilarious and equally absolutely true, because it's a question I ask myself all the time, and I've questioned about other people all the time. And the answer, the real answer to the question, which is why it's hilarious, is that I don't do it all. And I've mentioned this in another podcast before, where I listened to somebody being interviewed. I never watched Grey's Anatomy. I can hear the collective, what? I never watched Grey's Anatomy, but somebody, perhaps the producer, director, I don't know, because I never watched it, was interviewed. And she was interviewed, asked how she does it all. And listening to her answer resonated with me so deeply. And her answer was the same, I don't. And the reason is that when I'm on and fully immersed in my work, I cannot equally be on and fully immersed as a mom. I miss things. I'm not necessarily physically or mentally present because I am fully immersed in my work. And equally, when I'm fully immersed and present as a mom, I am not physically or mentally present or fully immersed in my work. It is this like duality that I struggle with, because they're both important to me. They're both very important to me. My kids coming first. But especially after moving to South Florida, building my business was how we were going to stay here, was how we were going to provide for our family. It was not just for my business and me, it was for my family. And so some sacrifices were made, and I wasn't as present for my kids sometimes. And it was really, really hard. And I've talked about when, my youngest was much younger. Every time I left for work, she would cry, "Don't leave. I don't want you to work. I don't want you to go." But the truth is I love my work. I really love it. I love my kids. I really love them. And I needed to find a way to meet both. And if you ask me, there are elements missing there, like being a wife, a friend, a daughter, a sister, and even more so, the piece that gets really lost in translation is being myself. I had a rabbi once say to me, "Francis, who are you?" And I said, I'm a woman. He's like, "That's your gender. Who are you?" I would say my age, because that's your age. I told him my job. He goes, "That's what you do." I told him I'm Jewish. He goes, "That's your religion. Who are you?" And I later met a friend who doesn't call herself a Rebbetzin, but I guess in some way she is. He's a very spiritual person. If you listen to our podcast, Reva Nava, she talks about this. And I also mentioned it in my podcast with Nikita. This idea, this concept of who you are without all these masks and things that you do and things you associate yourself with, but like, who are you at your core? Your values, your energy, your essence, your your mission, your love. Who are you? And I think life can be this crazy whirlwind, roller coaster, balancing act, and equally an incredible opportunity to navigate it all. Who am I? How do I take care of me? And not in the, you know, not just in the physical sense and not just in the, I'm going to get a massage or I'm going to go work out and eat food and blah, blah, blah. Like those things are all important, but how do I take care of my being, my soul, my essence? How do I take care of who I am and honor who I am in my life? How do I show up for my husband and my kids? How do I show up for my family and my friends? How do I show up for my business and my employees? And in the end, if you like take all of those away, it's how do I show up for me? I think that's the answer to the question is, if I can show up for me and really honor me in some ways, I can show up in all those other areas so much more. And that means saying no to things. And that means saying yes, hell yes to things. Like I am there. And that means turning my phone on do not disturb. And that means turning it on and being there for people. And that means playing a game with my kids or jumping in the pool or sitting and feeling the sunshine on our face at the beach, in the grass, in the snow, I guess. Looking at the moon and the stars, feeling gratitude, laughing with my husband and planning and being silly and sensual and loving and holding my mom, being there with my friends, like all of that, it allows me to be all of that. No, I lost my questions. Oh, here. I have some great questions from my staff. This is a really, really good one for anyone working in teams. It's specific to being a BCBA, but I think it can translate to many other areas. As a BCBA working with other teams, such as speech, OT, and school leadership, how do you handle the relationships that don't agree with ABA? How do you handle relationships that don't agree with you? Now, I have spent the majority of my career explaining myself. That means explaining ABA and how I implement ABA and how I'm different and all these things. In the end, the same way that you would with any other human, it's about having compassion for their experience. It's about being a safe place. And I would start by being curious. I like to approach almost everything with curiosity when I'm not triggered. When I'm triggered, I can't be curious. But when I am not triggered, I like to approach with curiosity. I wonder why they don't agree with ABA. What was your experience like? And I often ask that. What has your experience been like with ABA? When I first moved here, I remember getting a phone call from a mom who yelled at me. She yelled at me that she did not want ABA. As like an introductory call, I hadn't even like explained about what I do yet. She was just recommended that because of her experience and her child's needs, that she should contact me. And when she contacted me, she proceeded to yell at me that she did not want ABA. And all I heard was pain and fear. And I told her, I understand. And I asked her to tell me her experience with ABA and what she was afraid of. Because once she feels heard, She is more likely, especially if she feels heard and understood by me and me agree with her.
Wow.
That's not okay. That's not how it should be. Or, I'm so sorry that that's your experience. When she feels heard, or he, and validated, because I'm sure when you hear about their experience, you will have compassion and validation for their experience of it and their emotions behind it, they are more likely and more willing to listen. And that's when we share and we educate. We provide a new lens and a new opportunity and explain what we do differently and see if they're then open to collaboration. Because rejection comes from prior trauma or experience, an association, a negative association. ABA triggers people's alarms, not everybody's, but some people's alarms. So like, this is not safe. This is not okay. This has made me or my child or people I've seen or my clients or the families experience horrible feelings. And it has. Not necessarily intentionally, but it has. That's how I would approach it. How do you support a client who lives in a split home environment due to parental divorce while ensuring consistency in behavior intervention strategies across both homes? Ensuring behavioral strategic consistency like across any environment is challenging because it requires that the adults in that environment understand, learn the tools, master the tools, which means they can then implement it without you, understand the tools deeply, and then use them. So it's a lot of steps, which means it takes time. It takes buy-in from parents or teachers or whoever those adults are. In this case, it would be parents. It takes a deep-rooted understanding. So time with the analyst to go over what we're doing, why we're doing it, having them understand it, and not just understand it, but feel connected to it. It needs to feel connected to them. Have them implement it in a way that is genuine and authentic to them. So there are parents for whom setting boundaries is a foreign language. And how do I set a boundary, for instance, when I've never done it before? And it's, how do I take those baby steps? You meet them where they are, the same way you would with somebody who doesn't approve of ABA or like ABA, somebody who is your client. You understand where they are and you slowly build on their knowledge and their skills until you can fade yourself away because they understand. They have a different lens to view the behavior. They have different tools to address the behavior that feel good in their body, that connect to who they are as a human, that don't make them feel wrong or icky or disconnected from themselves, that feels authentic to them and that is actually supportive of their child. It takes a lot of time and it is not something that happens quickly, but also not something that happens consistently. We know learning is not, you know, an upward trajectory. Learning and development has like some bumps along the road. And so it's about understanding what those are, because those parents, like that child, are humans and souls going through their own journeys with their own struggles and challenges and their own highs and their own lives that they're, you know, working through. Especially if you think about divorce, it's a very challenging thing to navigate, raising a child in two different households. Some divorces work out, you know, where the parents end up being friendly or friends or even best friends. And some divorces, it's quite the opposite, because every dynamic is different. And it's about zoning in on the priority, which is that child, providing foundational information for the parents of that child, getting their support, getting their understanding, and also getting their deep-rooted connection to the approach. Yes, this aligns with me. Yes, I can and I'm willing to do this. Or no, I can't do that. This does not work for me. And adapting it for them and teaching, which requires repetition, modeling, support, and then baiting. Let's see if I have one more question to end. If you could have a coffee with anyone, who would it be and why? There are a few people. I would love to have a coffee with Albert Einstein. There is something about that man that has always fascinated me. Always, always, always. Deep-rooted fascination. I have a few other answers to that question. I'd love to have a coffee with Dr. Joe Dispenza. I'd love to sit down and have a podcast with him. I am deeply, deeply to my core grateful for the work he has done to create an understanding in a proven science to something I have always felt and known within me. Like, deeply grateful, and would love to learn from him forever. I'd love to have a coffee with my younger and future self. Like 20, 30 years from now and 20, 30 years ago, sit down with those versions of me. I can't even imagine what that would be like. And the last person who I've always wanted to have a coffee with since I was younger is Marshall Mathers, Eminem. I know, like, really not on the same scale as any of my other answers, but I have been his biggest fan. I mean, probably not his biggest fan. I can't rap all of his songs because my mouth doesn't move that fast and neither does my brain, but his brain is just brilliant. I am someone who has listened to his music and felt him through it, his soul, his pain, and his love and joy and his suffering. And I have always wanted to just sit with him and be like, I respect you, I am in awe of you, and I hold space for you. Like, I want to hug you. Somebody who has surpassed all odds and in the most brilliant, creative, incredible way. So, Marshall Mathers, Eminem, if you are listening to this, I don't know what you would be, but if you are, I want a coffee with you, sir. I just want to thank you for listening, because I didn't have a guest on today. I didn't have somebody for you to learn something totally new from except me. So thank you from the bottom of my heart and the depths of my soul. Thank you for tuning in. I love you all. Mwah.
A burst pipe, a dead water heater, the AC calling it quits. Who do you call? HomeServe is an easy way to handle unexpected home repairs with plans covering stuff basic homeowners insurance usually won't. Instead of scrambling for a contractor, you make one call to get the repair process started. Join the millions of customers who trust HomeServe right now. Go to homeserve.com/podcast for 50% less your first year. That's homeserve.com/podcast. Savings compared to renewal price. Void in Florida.